Welcome to the Pen to Profit Podcast. We cover everything from writing captivating prose to grammar to marketing tips, tricks, and insider advice to turn your passion for writing into cold, hard cash. Get ready to skyrocket your book sales and your audience with our guidance. Buckle up, because you're going on a rollicking ride through the realm of writing riches, because the Pen to Profit Podcast starts now.
All right, and we are live. Welcome back once again, all you Hemingway hopefuls and aspiring Austins, to another rip-roaring episode of the Pen to Profit Podcast. I am your host, proofreader, and copy editor, Ray Evans, and today I'm joined by another really special guest. Charlotte is a beacon of guidance and support for authors on their creative and personal journeys through her company, Her Narrative. With a passion for empowering female authors to enhance both their writing skills and personal growth, Charlotte offers developmental editing and book coaching services. A recognized public speaker and writing judge, Charlotte has graced the stages of prestigious events, including the American Family Insurance Dream Bank and the Women's Fiction Writers Association, where Charlotte lends her expertise to help recognize and uplift emerging talents in the literary world. In addition to guiding others, Charlotte is also on their authorial journey, actively crafting her debut women's fiction novel. Charlotte is a certified developmental editor and life coach, earning her certification through the Life Purpose Institute. This additional credential underscores her commitment to supporting authors, not just in crafting compelling stories, but also in nurturing their personal growth. Okay, Charlotte, so did you want to say hello to the audience? And also, could you tell us what is your favorite book or story and why?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Ray. Thank you for having me. And hello to all the listeners. It's great to be here. Oh, gosh, picking favorites is so hard.
You have to. You got to pick.
Well, I will have to say, I probably have to pick the stories that inspired me to become a writer initially. And as a kid, I was really obsessed with The Boxcar Children for some reason. I just loved that series of just very independent kids kind of taking on the world. And that was always very inspiring to me.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I haven't read those like in years. But, you know, with all the societal and political changes, if they were to write those stories now, all their parents would probably be like arrested for like a child negligence or something.
Yeah, I don't think the stories would necessarily hold up now. But I think I've always had a very independent spirit. And I think those stories really spoke to me in that sense.
Oh, wow. And we are actually I'm going to put that in my back pocket, because we're going to kind of circle back to that, that independent spirit a little bit later. So I do extensive, snooping or background research on everyone before they come on the show. And it looks like that you used to work, I believe, in digital marketing for about a decade. And you made a pivot sometime around 2023 and founded your company, Your Narrative. So I was curious, could you go into why you made that pivot from digital marketing, which you did for so long? I'm assuming you were good at it, because no one does anything for 10 years if they're not, and to actually, founding Her Narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I did work in digital marketing for just about 12 years, I think. So a little over a decade, worked for a lot of large companies, also worked for a lot of startups. And storytelling was actually the thing that pulled me towards marketing, knowing that, you know, from a young age, I loved stories, I loved writing. And so for me, as I kind of started to, you know, navigate the career world, marketing was something that really pulled and attracted to me, because there was so much story development behind the brands. There's so much story that goes out in your content across blogs, social media, email marketing. So that was kind of why I got into marketing. And then as I spent more and more time in it, it became more and more technical and less creative. And so I found myself troubleshooting Google Analytics and working with engineering teams a lot more than I was doing the storytelling side of things. So that's when I kind of really sat down and did some introspective, and even worked with coaches myself, and kind of really got back to the drawing board on what really lights me up. And that is storytelling and bringing stories forward into the world. So that's where I then got a certification in developmental editing, and then also got the life coach certification and became both the developmental editor for fiction and the life coach, book coach now. And yeah, that's really what inspired Her Narrative. Was just, it was time for a career pivot.
Oh, awesome. And we are going to, I'm really curious. So you mentioned you have a certification in developmental editing. So I think, could you explain to the audience specifically, what does developmental editing entail? And how does that differ from other types of editing, specifically line editing, copy editing, and proofing? I know this, but I'd like you, since you have like a certification, if you could explain that to all of us, how those four are different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that comes up for all writers is you don't realize that there's actually different types of editors. So that's a very common question that comes up because there are very much so, I think when we think editors, we think grammar and spelling. And actually before that stage, before you dive into that, is where the developmental edit slots in. So working with a developmental editor is looking at the overall structure of your novel and your story. So making sure that the plot, there aren't plot holes, the gaping holes that you're like, oh, this wasn't resolved. It also looks at just the character development and the character arc that happens. You're also looking for the pacing of the novel. So kind of what is the flow for that reader? And then you'll look at some things around like scene development and effective dialogue, all those little pieces. So ultimately, my job is to come in and look at a novel and identify the 3 to 4 areas that are really going to help elevate that novel to really meet the author's goals.
Okay, I see. And when contrasting that with, say, like proofreading or like copying, that's more of just like focusing on like grammar, spelling, syntax, and structure. Well, it sounds like developmental editing is more about the overall structure of like the story itself and like development of characters. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of that 10,000 foot view and kind of making sure that all the stories kind of hit the plot points and meet the reader expectation is ultimately what you're looking at, because you don't want readers to get to the end of that story and be really disappointed or feel like certain aspects of the story weren't resolved for them. So it's really about kind of what is that reader experience going to be? And then once you're able to kind of restructure some of those pieces that come back from the editor, then you can move on to the line editing and the copy editing.
Oh, got it. Okay. So that makes a lot more sense. So I'm curious, now that we have a better understanding of what developmental editing entails and why it's important, when you're working with your clients, how do you balance preserving an author's authentic voice while also suggesting that they make changes or improvements?
Yeah, this is a big one for me. I know this is like one of the biggest concerns for authors, and my job is to make sure that I keep that author voice as authentic as possible. I am not coming in to look to change that voice. It is very much so looking at how do we take what you have and just elevate that voice. And so it's really important for me that I'm honoring that voice and keeping the integrity of the voice in the story. And so that's something that I work like very much so with my clients is to make sure that that remains intact.
I see. Okay. So I'm curious, let's say you have a new client. How do you approach each editing project that you're working on? What are the first steps that you take to understand like an author's vision and an author's voice before you like, you know, get in there and start out looking at like those, like you said, that 10,000 foot view?
Yeah, well, the first step for me really starts with having an intro call. I think it's really important, like you're going to have a partnership and it's important that you have the right partners in your court. So I always like to have an intro call with the authors just to get to know each other, understand what the project is about, get a little bit more context of how each of us work and operate and kind of really establish what the goal is. I think that's so important because it can be really easy just to kind of maybe hire someone and hope for the best. But ultimately, I really look at this as a partnership and really wanting to make sure that, you know, we are working towards a similar goal. So it really starts with that intro call to make sure that we're aligned and it makes sense to work together. There's also some genres I don't work on. So I don't like to do like murder type novels or anything like that. I focus a little bit more on women's fiction and romance and a little bit of cozy mystery. But yes, anything that's too intense, I tend to send to someone else because I don't like to have nightmares.
Understandable. I think that's a really good point. You know, like fit is definitely important. So I can imagine that initial discovery call, it's very crucial to, you know, determining if that particular author is like a fit for, you know, for you and your skill set. Because that, like you said, that's very important. So I'm kind of curious, so based off of, you know, your background, in developmental editing, could you tell us what are some common, like problems or pitfalls that you've frequently seen in early drafts? And also kind of like a follow-up to that, for those problems and pitfalls that you commonly see, how do you guide authors in like fixing or overcoming them?
Yeah, this is great. I mean, this is definitely something that comes up. And I mean, there's lots of different areas there might be quote unquote pitfalls. I just look at them as areas of opportunity for growth. But yeah, in working with clients, like once we've decided we're going to be working together, that's when I will read through the manuscript and I make both in-text comments and then also create a very in-depth editorial letter that sums up those kind of 3 to 4 areas I like to focus on to help elevate the book. And so once we've done that, we will actually have a wrap-up call and review that together, because I don't want authors ever to feel just completely overwhelmed or not unclear of what some of the feedback is. And so some of the areas that I do offer a lot of feedback in, I think one of which is too much info dumping within the first couple of chapters. So this is just a ton of backstory and a ton of flashbacks. This is very much so part of pacing in the novel. So knowing when and where to put some of that information, because we are really ultimately just dropping into your main character, protagonist's life, just in this one window of their life. And so they have a life before the book and they hopefully have a life after the book. And it's really about what is the most important information and when do you need to reveal that? So oftentimes there can be a lot of backstory filled into the first couple of chapters, which can be a little bit disorienting for readers because it's hard to tell like what information is important to retain, what are we going to come back to. And so it's really important that the beginning of the book is really focused on immersing people into the story and kind of understanding what the theme is, what some of their challenges might be. And then it's about kind of dripping out some of the backstory instead of just dumping it. So that relates very much so to pacing. So that's the really big one. And then there's also kind of the other side of that, where there might be tons of action and there might be lots of characters continuing to do lots of different things in the story. And there's not those moments to kind of retract and understand how what just happened impacts them. So doing that through some inner dialogue, or them having conversations with someone they trust and love. So understanding that sometimes, yes, we're writing a story and there's a plot, but that doesn't mean it needs to be like action, 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 action. There can be these moments of reprieve where both the reader gets to take a breath and also the characters in the book get to take a breath. So I think that's another pitfall I see. And then the last one that I see a lot is just dialogue for dialogue's sake versus dialogue that is moving the story forward or having a real impact on the story. So dialogue should really reveal information and really help move that story forward. So sometimes that is a pitfall I see too. It's like, oh, I've had all this action and there hasn't been dialogue, so I'll put some dialogue in here and it's not necessarily impactful to the story.
Ooh, those are some pretty good points. And working as like a proofreader and a copywriter, I've seen some of those things in some of the manuscripts I've worked on. Maybe I should actually send those people over to you, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely.
So I was curious. I kind of wanted to, you know, shift gears a little bit. So like I mentioned earlier, do extensive background snooping on everyone before they come on the show, which basically involves, talking to like your third grade teachers, any previous boyfriends, your parents, three police officers from the town you grew up in. And also I was on your website, hernarrative.com. I'm actually on it right now. And let's see, it says on here on the about page, her narrative helps you accomplish your lifelong writing goals with greater ease and less self-doubt. Through developmental editing, book coaching, workshops, and retreats, her narrative supports you in shaping your mindset and manuscript to write a novel off of your bucket list. So I kind of wanted to, switch gears now that I think we have a better understanding of what developmental editing is, but you also are a book coach as well. And I kind of feel that, at least in the authors that I talk to and the circles that I'm in on social media and in person as well, there's kind of this perception that writing is kind of like a solitary pursuit, kind of like Ernest Hemingway. You're in a room by yourself with a typewriter, a copious amount of daiquiris as well, if you're trying to get the whole Hemingway experience there. So now that we know what would you do as a developmental editor, could you also explain what you do as a book coach? And could you also give us like a general outline of your coaching process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to your point, exactly. I think writing can be such a solitude. If you do have a drink of beverage with you or not, sometimes it helps. But yeah, it can be such a solitary experience. And so being able to, I think, invite people into your process can be really, really valuable. And I think it can really help you get to where you want to be quicker and with less of these like intense hurdles that might come up around like self-doubt, imposter syndrome, fear of failure. Just knowing you have like support through all of that, because it's all part of the creative process. And so the book coaching really came from, yes, both my developmental editing and then also the life coaching and kind of bringing those two together specifically to help authors write their books with greater ease. And so the coaching process is really looking at kind of what are your writing goals and establishing those and getting very clear on what those goals are. And then the coaching process is really helping you move forward towards that goal. And so that could be that you're just starting out, you're just writing your first novel, and you just are so confused about character arcs and like, how does that impact my story? Like, what pieces do I really need to pay attention to? So some of it can be very technical and looking at the craft of fiction, or clients might bring like, you know, like we mentioned, dialogue can be a pitfall. So thinking about like, how do I strengthen these areas of my dialogue and how can I make it more impactful? So the sessions are very client-led in the sense that whatever the client feels like is pulling at them the most is what we will focus on, knowing that we have established these clear goals that we're working towards. So that is one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is the accountability piece, because again, you can set your own goals, but if you're kind of writing for yourself, maybe you have one or two sessions of writing a week, but life comes up and laundry needs to be folded and grocery shopping has to happen. So it can be very easy to have writing move to the bottom of the to-do list. So again, it's that consistent accountability. And then really the third piece is that mindset piece. So that's such an important piece that I think sometimes we can beat ourselves up about when it comes up. If it is self-doubt or feeling like our writing isn't good enough, all writers experience that. And when we're kind of writing off in our corners, it can be really hard to remember that that is something that we all experience. And it comes up in anything. When we go for a big goal, it could be that you have fitness goals, or kind of career change goals, whatever those might be. Having a coach that can really help you and support you through all of those stages of that journey can be really, really valuable. And so, yeah, usually I work with writers in two different stages. Sometimes it's, you know, they're writing their first book and they're just kind of like, I don't know what I don't know, or I'm not sure where to get started, or like, is this even making sense? And then there's the other side of usually after the editing process. So when they are doing those edits to kind of, again, coaching through what needs to be done on like the craft of fiction technical side, and then also the mindset piece, especially as they're moving towards publishing.
I see. Okay. Just having discussed developmental editing and what you do as a book coach, I kind of have an understanding of what but I'm going to ask this anyway, because I think you could probably say it better than I can. Can you explain to us how your book coaching and developmental editing work hand in hand and complement one another to ensure that your clients, that the writer clients you work with, end up with a cohesive and engaging story?
Yeah, I mean, that's it exactly. Is that the goal is to have that cohesive story that they're really proud to put out into the world and feel really good about it. I mean, there's nothing worse than pushing yourself towards a goal and then getting there and just feeling kind of exhausted and kind of like, ugh, I don't even know if that was good, but it's gone. It's out into the world. Like, you want to be able to enjoy the process as much as you enjoy the result. And so bringing these two together, I think ultimately just helps everyone not only stay accountable to their goals and what they really want, but encourages you to continue to go, especially when it's hard. It's very easy to show up on days where you're excited and it feels fulfilling, but on the days where it doesn't feel as great, or you're tired, and it can be really hard to continue to show up. And sometimes it might be that you put your writing down for a week, and the next thing you know, it's been 6 weeks or 2 months or 2 years. And so I think, again, having someone that's just in your corner, that's rooting for you, that understands the depth of what it takes to create a novel and the structure of it, and also knowing that those pitfalls in the mindset piece are going to come up. And so just, again, having someone in your corner that's supporting you and rooting for you
is
really
okay.
Important.
So I guess kind of to summarize what we've been talking about thus far, developmental editing, it differs from proofreading and copy editing, which are more concerned with grammar and structure, grammar and like punctuation and syntax, and that developmental editing is more of like big picture, looking at the overall structure and cohesiveness of the story. And book coaching, that is more of kind of like you said, it's more client led. It's about accountability and helping the particular writer with that particular book project. And these two, and the developmental editing, the book coaching, they pretty much go hand in hand. But someone could probably, but you have clients who probably just use one or the other as well, right? And not both together.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes a client will come to me for a developmental edit and then need the coaching support as they go through making changes to their novel. Or sometimes people, if they're writing their first novel, will go through coaching and then need the developmental edit once they have the book in a place that they're ready to start that editing journey.
All right, awesome. You had mentioned just a couple of minutes ago that you're also a certified life coach. You got your certification through the Life Purpose Institute. So for people who don't know, can you explain to us exactly what is a life coach? I understand generally what coaching is. Like if you play like a sport, you have a coach, you play basketball, baseball, volleyball, whatever. We're all alive in a sense, you know? So I guess some people might be thinking, why do I need a life coach? So can you explain to us what life coaching is and why do you think that, you know, people actually need it or look for it or seek it out?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's definitely a very large term. Like you said, we are all alive, so life coach. and I think under that umbrella of life coaching are so many different avenues. So like you said, you can definitely find someone in the fitness or sports arena. You can find people that are career coaches specifically. And really what life coaching does is it's about, you know, gaining the clarity of what you really want and then creating a plan to get there and then addressing kind of any of the uncomfortable pieces that come up along the way. So it really is, again, a lot of it is accountability, but a lot of it is also diving into what do you want? And so that is usually the starting point, is some people don't even know where to start with like what it is that they want. They just know that something needs to change. And so it's gaining that clarity and then creating the plan and then showing up to take continued action towards what you want. So again, it's about the accountability and really building your confidence muscle so that you are staying motivated and engaged towards your goals.
I understand. Okay. And I just want to make a quick point here, Charlotte, that when I made the reference, why do we need life coaches? Because we're all alive. I was just being facetious. I actually do know.
I actually like that though.
Yeah. I've actually gotten life coaching. I don't know if you've ever heard about Brooke Castillo. I'm a big fan of like her and her material and like the model and the way that she approaches life coaching. But I'm kind of curious now. So now that the audience has a better understanding of what life coaching is, how do you incorporate what you learn, your knowledge as a life coach into the work that you do with authors? How do you use that when you're doing your developmental editing and your book coaching?
Yeah, so I'd say it comes up under the book coaching piece of that. And so that is very much so, again, if we're setting writing goals to say, I want to have the first draft of my novel done by September 1st, then it's really a kind of reverse engineering. What does that look like? It could be word count goals that you're working towards specifically. And so as we're setting those goals and creating that plan to go forward, it's then getting some of the support along the way. So you might be chugging along, you get to 20,000 words and you're like, I'm feeling great. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I think I'm a terrible writer, or there's no way I'm ever going to get this done. So there's the mindset tools that I have from the certification that I can then show up and help people navigate through those. So again, fear of failure is a really big one. And there's certain kind of questions and activities we can do to kind of address what does that fear look like? Because oftentimes when we turn into our fear, we can learn a ton about it and it can soften the edges a little bit, if you will. So it doesn't become so intense and so consuming. And same with even things like time management. Sometimes it can just be we have best laid plans and for some reason we just can't find the time to write as often as we would like. And so there's also tools that we can use to work through kind of time management and how do we balance the time that we have available. So a lot of the life coaching tools come up in that book coaching journey where we're working towards our goals. And yeah, it can just be, I know for myself, my own writing journey, that there's definitely been times where it's like feeling so good, feeling great. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I don't feel like this is ever going to be good. No one's ever going to read it. And even like the flip side of fear of failure is also the fear of success. So you can also see that with some authors and clients I've worked with, where it's like you get towards that finish line of publishing, and then there's all of a sudden more fear that comes up because it's like, what are the reviews going to be? What, like, is anyone going to buy it?
That uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I see. So it's kind of like what you're doing. So the way, kind of like the way you incorporate the life coaching into your book coaching is, like you were saying, like accountability and kind of like helping people to, like you said, get over that fear of failure, that fear of doubt and uncertainty, kind of like getting out of like their own ways, so that they can actually see the creation of their book through from beginning to end.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious. I'm going to make an assumption here. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Based off the name of your company, Her Narrative, with her, the pronoun her being the operative word. Do you tailor your coaching specifically to support female authors? And if so, how do you do that?
Yeah, so I do work mainly with female identifying individuals who are authors. And the reason for that is because I think it is really important that we have a space for women to cultivate their stories to bring forward in the world. I think women have such a unique perspective on the world, and we're not always listened to in the way that we would like to be. and so I think when our voices can be shared in the world in a way that's very authentic, I think that can be a great platform for learning and understanding each other and creating empathy. And then hopefully that can create some change in the world. And so for me, it's just really important to create very like safe containers for people to dive into their stories. Sometimes those can be stemming from very personal experiences as well that have inspired stories that are not necessarily the easiest thing to revisit or to relive or to redescribe in stories. So I think it's really important just to create a space. I know for myself, I feel like there was a lot of messaging growing up to be quiet, to, you know, not speak up loudly, not to necessarily use your voice. And so for me, I think it's really important to, again, create a safe space for people to tap into their voice and really express the authentic story they want to share with the world.
Awesome. So I guess my next question I wanted to ask you was, still kind of in book coaching right now, a lot of writers, especially newer ones, struggle with what's called imposter syndrome. So I was curious, how do you guide authors to overcome the self-doubt and the feeling that they aren't, quote unquote, real writers? And are there any specific strategies or exercises that you want to share with the audience right now that you find particularly effective to help new writers build their confidence in themselves and their work?
Yes, absolutely. That's a very
four-part question, yeah. But let's throw it all out there.
We'll dive into it. Yes, I think that's one of the things, and I know I felt this when I first started writing too, is like I was afraid to tell anyone I was a writer, and God forbid use the word author. Like that felt like until I'm published and out into the world, like I can't call myself an author. So I absolutely understand that, and it is a real fear. And I think with that imposter syndrome, I feel like imposter syndrome and self-doubt go very hand in hand. And so there can be a lot of sources to that, and it can be very personal. But I think imposter syndrome is very common, especially when we start something new, because we're learning a lot and we're seeing other people that are doing it that might be a little bit further down the journey than we are. So that's kind of when that like comparison can come up and cause imposter syndrome, which causes the self-doubt. And so a lot of my clients, I see a lot of, that fear of their writing not being good enough, fear of no one liking their book, the fear of failure. The imposter syndrome is kind of rooted in that self-doubt, which is the lack of confidence in their abilities. And so I think the first step is just to kind of give yourself a little bit of grace, which I know can be really hard, especially if you're a high achiever like myself. It can be really hard not to just do more. And really just kind of know that you are starting something new, and it's going to be a little bit challenging. And so some of the ways to begin to address self-doubt is to just start again by that acknowledgement that this is what you're experiencing. And I also encourage writers sometimes to write down what you're feeling. We're writers. And so being able to just kind of write what we're feeling, put it onto a piece of paper and get it outside of ourselves and put it externally so that we can see it. And sometimes even just like putting that paper up, putting it across the room or putting it on a chair, it can be super helpful just to see that those feelings are kind of temporary and they're not necessarily defining you or consuming all of you. And so kind of letting those feelings just be separate to you can be really powerful. I know just kind of in our own female experience, again, like society can tell us that we should be small and you shouldn't start something new or you won't be successful. And that's not just limited to women. I acknowledge that. But I do think sometimes that does happen a lot more. And so there are a couple questions you can also, once you feel comfortable kind of having those feelings written down externally, it's just, I would say there's probably like three questions I would invite people to then journal on. And one of them is kind of, what about this experience feels so scary? So really thinking about kind of what's the root cause of my fear? What is feeling so scary? And so fear again can show up as the self-doubt, as the imposter syndrome. And so if that wasn't in your way, kind of what would you do differently? And I love this question because I think it helps like expand your mind a little bit. It takes you out of that kind of contracted state of fear and starts to be like, oh, okay, if this wasn't here, what could it possibly feel like? And what could I possibly be doing? And then I think once you're in a little bit more of that expansive state, another great question is to ask is, what is one action that you can do that will help you move forward? And so this can be super small. It doesn't have to be a huge giant step forward. It can literally just be, I need to go take a nap, or I'm going to make myself a cup of tea, or I'm going to sit down and write just 500 words. Like whatever feels like the right next step can be really helpful for us. Because I think, again, when we turn into that fear, we can often find that it's not as intense as it was feeling. And it's usually there to protect us, especially when we're doing something new. It's a little bit of our brains freaking out of like, I don't know, is this survivable? Are we going to be okay? And that sounds really extreme, but it is how our brains work. And so when we can kind of acknowledge and take that step back and be like, you know what, we're going to be okay. And just this moment is a little bit tough. But being able to sit with those questions and kind of turn into it and then kind of expand and then take a step towards it. Because again, I think that helps our brains understand that like, we're just going to take this little step forward and we're going to be okay in this process.
Well, that was really good. So if you're listening right now, as long as you're not driving, I would recommend that you just rewind about 30 seconds and write down those three questions. I also did want to just piggyback on something you said about, you know, that fear wanting to keep us safe. Because I mentioned before, big fan of Brooke Castillo. She actually says that like a lot, because like the way she describes it is like, as humans, you know, we live in like this modern society with like computers, electricity, and all this other stuff. But we're really like descended from like cave people, like hunter gatherers. And back in those days, like our brains and our bodies wanted to conserve like as much energy as possible. Then you kind of wanted to quote unquote stay in the cave and like use as little energy as possible and just kind of, you know, not venture out or do anything that might seem like scary or unusual, because there might be a saber-toothed tiger out there in the bush. So that's kind of where like that fear comes from. It's tens of thousands of years of conditioning from us as humans. And in the past, it would keep us safe, but now, you know, there's not a saber-toothed tiger. Wait, I hope there's not a saber-toothed tiger outside, you know, in the bushes. And it's kind of just like a, how would you say, like, it's like a throwback that doesn't really serve any purpose, but, you know, it still like exists in all of our psyches. So I think those are some really good questions there. And if you are someone that, you know, does feel that doubt, I would definitely recommend that you try, you know, those three steps that Charlotte had just given. So I wanted to sort of switch gears a little bit. So I wanted to ask you a couple of, how would I say this, like a more like writing-based questions based off of your experience and background as a developmental editor. What would you say are maybe, I don't know, one or two of your top pieces of advice for creating compelling characters that'll resonate with readers?
Yes, character development is so important. It's actually one of my favorite things to talk about. I think that the character development is probably one of the most important aspects of your story, aside from the plot itself. because ultimately readers are really resonating with your main character and protagonist. And so if readers know it or not, they are connecting on a conscious and unconscious level and resonating with that character. And we want to have characters that we can root for, even if they're not like the most amazing or doing the most amazing things. We want to see that there's like those redeemable qualities for them. And so we want our characters to get some sort of happy ending or resolve at the end. And so creating characters and spending the time creating very compelling and realistic characters is really important. And I say realistic, meaning, again, we want to relate to them on some sort of human level, even if they are an alien. There's some sort of persona to them that is relatable to us. And so, yeah, I think the most important piece too in the character arc is making it not feel so unrealistic, because if a character's, you know, journey is very much so unrealistic, it starts to build distrust with the reader. So that can come through in their like mannerisms and their dialogue. There's different ways. And so really before writing, if possible, creating very much so like personas for your character development can be really helpful. I know I saw like Dan Levy, who, you know, him and his dad, Eugene, created Schitt's Creek. And he was talking about how his dad made him sit down for weeks before they could start writing the script to like figure out who these characters were. And I think it's such an important exercise. Like he was just like sitting there like, okay, can we go like write more? Can we write the script already? And Eugene was very much so like, no, we need to like spend more time on the character development. And you can see how that came through so strong. If it weren't for those characters and their, you know, unique quirks and their behaviors and their responses to things and their likes and dislikes, like it came through so strong and we love those characters. And so being able to spend as much time as you can understanding your own character's backstory, their personality, how they tick or how they talk to people, what their motivations are, I think the more time you can spend with that, the easier it's going to be to write them. And I think there's going to be create more compelling characters that readers are really going to love. And so one of the things I sometimes encourage readers to do to practice this is to actually create like a character profile of your best friend. So how can you describe them in full detail around like how they act, how they behave, like what comes to mind when you think about them? Have you seen them in certain situations and how they respond to the world around them or how they think about the world around them? It can be a really great way to kind of glean out kind of how we describe people and understanding what makes them tick. And then being able to kind of take that and then create the fictional characters can be super helpful. Not that you want to make your best friend a character in your book. It's probably not recommended, but
probably illegal.
Right. But again, just getting, I think it's getting the developing the muscle of really understanding how we describe people and what makes each person unique.
Wow. That was a very, very good example that I hadn't considered myself. So I'm curious, could you also, could you discuss the, how it says, the importance of setting or world building, and how do you coach or mentor authors to like improve or enhance these elements in their stories?
Yeah, setting is a big one. And I think sometimes it doesn't feel important, but I almost look at setting as additional character. And a character that is kind of very revealing, it can reveal a lot of information and provide a lot of important context. And so you can almost think about setting being like the bowl or the net that the story is sitting in. So it's not always like in your face, unless maybe you're writing like a fantasy book or a fantasy world, like that tends to be a little bit more immersive. But something like women's fiction or romance, the setting is a little bit in the background, but it's still, it's holding the whole story together. And so I think it's really important that the setting gets the attention it needs. And ultimately, we really want it to create a very like vivid setting that immerses the readers and really considers the whole sensory experience. So we might be reading words on the page, but those words, we also want to feel, taste, hear what is happening to the characters within it. So again, that's kind of really diving into understanding your setting and knowing kind of how it can reveal information, how it can show up in specific areas. Again, that can be part of the pacing that happens or kind of what events happen where. I think the book Where the Crawdads Sing is one of you know, the most beautifully descriptive settings. And we're very much so in those marshes with the characters. And so that's always a great one to look to if you're looking for some really great examples. But yeah, ultimately it should just be, it should be logical and believable. Even if you're creating a fantasy world, it should feel like you can just jump off, you know, jump into the page and be immersed in it as a reader.
Exactly. I totally agree with that, especially like in like sci-fi and fantasy, you definitely need to, I was just like, craft your own rules, or, you know, even draw like a map of like various places that exist within the world. But that was a real good point you made. I never considered that before. Setting is almost like an additional character in its own right in your story. So you definitely don't want to, you know, overlook that. And you had mentioned earlier in our chat, I did want to circle back to this, that you're working on your own book right now. Are you still working on it? Or, well, today's March 19th, 2024, we're recording this. Are you still working on your debut novel, or have you released it already?
Yeah, no, I'm still working on it right now. So cool. Walking okay. My own talk, because I'm supporting other authors in the same journey. And yes, it is a women's fiction book. So it is focused, a lot of the themes I like to write about, which is probably no surprise given the name of my company, is Her Narrative. But the theme is really much about women finding their voice and then going for what they want.
Okay. Could you give us a high level synopsis or summary of what the book is about?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the book follows Olive, who's my main character, and she spent most of her life following the script she felt that was provided for her. So very much so that, like, get good grades, go to college, get the good job. And so she followed a lot of that and ended up in hospital due to chronic stress from her corporate job. And so she was forced to make some lifestyle changes, which landed her unassumingly, I guess she wasn't planning on it, but she ended up buying a property on the Oregon coast with hopes of turning it into a retreat center. And so while she was building a new community and friends and a love interest, it all becomes compromised with both a wildfire strikes and also the local government does not want a retreat center. And they are pushing back because they're a very small community. They don't want that there. So it's really ultimately about, can Olive like find her voice to fight for the future that she wants, or will it all crumble again?
Oh, well, it's kind of like you were mentioning earlier with like Her Narrative. It's about, you know, like the women not just kind of like sitting in the background, rather asserting themselves. So I kind of see a little bit of parallel there between the pushback from the community and Olive trying to build like her retreat in the area. So now, sticking with this, as you're still writing your book, so I guess I wanted to ask you, how has writing your own novel, which you're still working on, how has that informed or changed your approach when you work with authors, either for coaching or developmental editing on their books?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in working with other authors, it actually makes me feel less alone and realizing that we all have areas of growth. And even if you have been studying the craft of fiction for decades, like there's still areas, like it's never going to be perfect. I think that's one of the beautiful things about being a writer is that you're always growing and learning. And so I would say there's definitely, it's been helpful just to not feel as alone, and that we all have things that we need to work on, and we all have similar pitfalls that come up in the journey. So for me, it's really been helpful to know that I'm not alone. And then I think, again, it's like the shared journey that we're on. And for me, I think becoming developmental editor was the thing that's helped me the most with my writing, because really understanding that craft of fiction and diving deeper into what makes up the story structure and the pacing and the character development and dialogue and all of those pieces have been super helpful for me in just learning. And so I think that's the piece of it, is just like, it's an area that we can continue to learn and grow within our writing. And so that will never end. And so I think that's been one of the great, great parts to this journey and in working with clients.
All right. So I think we've covered a lot of good ground today. We've discussed what developmental editing is, the significance of developmental editing, what book coaching is, and how the two dovetail together to help writers make more engaging and cohesive stories. So if anyone was listening to this right now, Charlotte, and they wanted to learn more about you or directly wanted to reach out to you to see if they were a fit for either editing or coaching. No violent murder stories. She already said she doesn't like those. What would be the best way to reach you and to get in contact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So hernarrative.com is the best place. I have all my social links on there. I'm very active on Instagram and TikTok. And I also have a novel writing checklist on the homepage of the website. So you can just scroll down and subscribe to get that. And that's been a really helpful tool for authors in creating a checklist and resources for writing your novel. And then also a couple additional checklists for self-publishing and then also your traditional publishing. So it's a great roadmap for if you're getting started.
All right, great. And I will have links to both of those in the show notes. And actually, before we go, I'm just on your website again. I think you do like writing retreats, it looks like, in Portland, Oregon. Do you want to tell us yes. about that out of curiosity?
Absolutely. So I do have a writing retreat coming up in September 2024. And we're going to be gathering for 2 days just outside of Portland to dive into both areas of developmental editing and the mindset pieces of it. So we will be diving into character development, story structure, dialogue, and then we will also be diving into some of the imposter syndrome, the self-doubt, and time management as well.
Oh, and it says, 2 days of expert guided sessions to help write your novel with greater ease, continental breakfast, lunch every day, closing happy hour on Sunday. Come on, guys, continental breakfast, lunch every day. I definitely think you want to actually put a link to that in the show notes as well. So, Charlotte, I wanted to thank you for your time and discussing your expertise when it comes to book coaching and editing and making our story stronger. And that is a wrap for another episode of the Pen to Profit podcast. I have been your host, Ray Evans, and signing off here with Charlotte. And as we normally say around these parts, the pen is mightier than the sword. Unless you're in a sword fight, then you might want to reconsider your options. Have a great day, folks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Pen to Profit podcast. If you've enjoyed hanging out with us today, swing by iTunes or your podcast app of choice and leave a rating and write a review. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button to get more of this grammar goulash delivered piping hot to your ear holes every week. And if you're looking for more tips, tricks, and free trainings that aren't available anywhere else, click the link in the show notes to join the Author Success Hub Facebook group. It's one part mastermind group and one part creative writing workshop. Except you can attend in your pajamas without judgment. Plus, you'll be mixing it up with fellow authors who are all about that writing and profiting life. Until next time, keep putting pen to paper and turning those pages to profit. Ciao.